Want to get your business in front of real sports fans? The Fade Route with D&Z reaches over 1,000 listeners every month. We drop fresh episodes every week and stay active on social media so your brand doesn't just get heard, it stays top of mind. Local, loyal, and ready to spend. That's our audience. Are you ready to be part of the in crowd?
Yes!
Let's talk about how we can increase your foot traffic or get people to visit your website. Email us today and or message us on our socials so we can find the best packages for you. You can hit us up at faderoutemail@gmail.com and find us on our socials at Fade Route Podcast. Time to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
Coming at you from the AO Studios, it's the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Powered by Riverside FM.
Coming at you live from the AO Studio.
AO.
It's the Fade Route with D and Z. I am D, and we've got a great show for you tonight.
Yes, we do.
Mark Sanchez gets into a street fight. The Yankees get blowed out, and the Cubs and the Phillies, oh, they in trouble. But we'll begin today's show with breaking news. Joe Flacco of the Cleveland Browns has been traded to the Joe Burrow-less Cincinnati Bengals. Z, what do you make of this trade? What does this do for Cleveland? What does this do for the Bengals?
All right, so let's break down.
In-division trade.
So yeah.
Take them.
The third time. It's only been the third time in like league history that a quarterback has been traded in division. So Donovan McNabb, Drew Bledsoe, Joe Flacco. So that's kind of where we are in this case. Now, Flacco is also going with a sixth round pick to Cincy in exchange for a fifth rounder. So my question is, what were the Giants asking for Jameis Winston?
Right?
What were the Giants asking? What were the Giants asking for Russ?
Did they get a call?
But you, I mean,
they had to make the call, right? You don't want to trade a guy in division, right?
No.
This guy's been sitting in the meeting rooms. He knows the game plan. He knows all the calls. Why would you send him in division unless you think it's going to hurt the other team? But then if you're the Bengals,
you're so desperate.
But there are other players out there. You said Winston. You said Wilson. How about Kirk Cousins? Like, there are other. How about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
100%.
I think Mac Jones has played well enough where you might be like, oh, we could probably use his services. Obviously, Taylor's thinking, I don't know what the hell he's thinking.
So, 815 yards, 2 touchdowns, 6 picks. Like, that's who he is. That's what he is
now. And he's got to learn the offense, right? And they've already got a bad offensive line. They've already gotten Joe Burrow hurt. So what is 40-plus-year-old Joe Flacco about to walk into right now?
Pain.
Right?
Pain.
Like, wouldn't you think you wanted someone that could scramble or throw the ball far? I know he could throw the ball far. He can do that. But right. I thought Jameis was what – Jameis seemed like a perfect
answer. Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, even if – you wanted to call the Jets about Tyrod Taylor. Like, okay. I would still take him over Joe Flacco. He's younger. So,
all right.
Like, he's mobile. Like, you need...
Isn't the backup on the Bears pretty good, too? He's pretty good.
Case Keenum is the backup on the Bears.
Case Keenum would be excellent for that team.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It just... He's old. He's slow. He's a pocket passer behind a bad offensive line.
I'm just curious what kind of conversation happened when they were talking about this. Like, all right, Browning's pretty terrible, guys. We're going to have to move on here. Who's out there? What do you think, Joe? Jameis. What do you think, Bill? Wilson. What do you think, Craig? You know that Flacco is still slinging it pretty good over in Cleveland. I think he just got replaced by a rookie who played for Oregon. All right, let's get them on the phone. Let's see what they're looking for. Like, is that how it went down? Tell me you struck out, right? Struck out. You whiffed on three guys, and then you're like, all right, I guess we'll go with Flacco, right?
There's no way.
He wasn't your first choice,
there's
right?
There's no way.
He wasn't there's your no first way. Choice, right?
No way.
Right?
No.
Can't be.
No.
Zach Wilson, you wouldn't want Zach Wilson slinging it in that offense. He runs in the wrong direction, but he can run, right?
Yeah. You're telling me that you wouldn't call the Lions, kick the tires maybe on Teddy Bridgewater? I think he's there.
How about Gardner Minshew, who's the backup of the Kansas City Chiefs? You're not going to give Gardner Minshew played pretty well for Jacksonville for a couple of weeks, right?
Absolutely. Huh? I mean, you're telling me that they wouldn't take...
Who's that other guy that played for the Titans, and then he played for another team, and he was really good?
Dobbs?
No. He played for the Titans last year. Oh, he was good. He was drafted. He was drafted in the first round by them.
Oh, Malik Willis.
Malik Willis.
He's on the Packers. He's backing up Jordan Love.
All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, this would have been the perfect opportunity for Will Levis.
Damn.
Oh, well. But what does this mean for the Bengals? I don't know what the
hell
this means
for the Bengals. Shador?
I mean...
Why Flacco? When the Browns called Cleveland, was Cleveland like, yo, you're not going to believe this. Cleveland just called us for Joe Flacco. See if they'll throw a sixth in.
Keep going. Right?
Right?
Like, when you get the answer you want, hang up.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
It had to be. But this doesn't make the Bengals any better. It really doesn't. No. I mean, yes, you have a stronger arm quarterback who can get the ball to Chase and Higgins. The problem is that you have a fragile quarterback. You're going to end up going to Browning anyway.
He doesn't get hurt, though. He takes a beating and he keeps on ticking, but he's not mobile.
He's not our age, dude. Eventually, yeah, that bump card.
I can't imagine trying to get up after getting hit.
it's like shit. Oh. How many Advil do you think he pregames with?
I don't know. He seems like such an even-keeled, like, chill guy. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, it's just very surprising that this is the route they decided to go. You know, unless the asking price was too high out there. The other thing I was thinking is maybe Atlanta doesn't want to give up on Kirk Cousins. Not give up on him. Maybe they don't want to give him away. You know, maybe they don't want to trade him. The Giants thing I don't understand because Jameis seems like a great idea. Even Russ seemed like a great idea, right?
I got it. Andrew Dalton. What, you couldn't reunite with Andrew Dalton?
Oh, man. Yeah, right?
He's in Carolina. I'm sure you could. That would have been cheap.
For sure. Yeah, bring him back. Yeah. He could throw it still, Andrew.
He can sling it, man.
So, very strange, not really understanding what's going on there, but as far as Cleveland's concerned, I mean, they knew that they were going to get rid of one of their quarterbacks, right? They knew they had to get rid of one of them this season. Just surprising it's the guy who they started the season with. He was the starter at one point. And I didn't think Gabriel played that well to warrant that, oh, we're not going to need this guy anymore. But that's neither here nor there.
Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much with FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their graphic tees, hoodies, snapbacks, accessories, and more. Go to fckclout.com today and check out current season and past season merchandise for men and women. Get it while you can. That's fckclout.com. Check them out today. fckclout.com.
I know we started off with football, but that was just because it's breaking news. I know hockey started today, but we're actually going to start with baseball. So we'll start in the National League, where both the Dodgers and the Brewers have a 2-0 series lead on the Phillies and the Cubs. So the Yankees are also down 2-0. We'll get to them, but... Are these series over, or do the underdogs have a shot here?
Rangers currently losing 1-0 to the Penguins, by the way, in the season opener.
And just to talk about the Penguins for a second, you got Crosby, Malkin, and Letang playing together for their 20th season.
Unbelievable.
20 years together, those three fucking guys. That's wild.
Unbelievable. So, do the underdogs have a chance here? So, you're looking at the Cubs and the Phillies. The Phillies starting pitching is just getting hammered, and they're starting Aaron Nola. You're starting Aaron Nola in an elimination game. Like, that's a recipe for disaster. They miss Zach Wheeler, something awful. They do. Honest to God, they do. And they got to Ohtani. That's the fucked up part. They got to Ohtani. It was 3-0
at one point. He got to them, too.
And then eventually he got to them. Exactly. And Ohtani hasn't really hit in this series. Mm-hmm. Hasn't really. So it's a tale of two series, right? Like, the Phillies were able to jump ahead. The Dodgers said, that's cute. But it just goes to show you how far and away better the Dodgers are. They can run Tyler Glasnow out of the bullpen, and they're having Roky Sasaki close.
It's crazy.
It's an embarrassment. It's crazy. Blake Treinen pitched like shit, and they could just keep rolling, man. They could just throw anybody out there. It's amazing. But as far as Milwaukee and the Cubs, you know, it looks like a mismatch. It looks like an absolute mismatch between Milwaukee and the Cubs. And again, it boils down to pitching. Like, you have, you know, the Cubs starters not doing great at all. Like, Imanaga didn't even get out of the third inning, and he's supposed to be your ace.
Yeah, he's giving up homers like Mitch Berger, right? Like,
yeah, he's,
oh no,
he's,
Vaughn. Andrew Vaughn took him yards. Like, give me Vaughn. Wow, okay.
Give me Vaughn. So, and Kyle Tucker's not really posting. Like, Suzuki showed up, so at least say Suzuki showed up. So that's nice. But Milwaukee is just on this. They're just on this mission to show that if you do the little things right, you don't need to have the star-studded lineup. Because look at it. You're looking at Turner, Bush, Nico Horner, Kyle Tucker, Pete Crow Armstrong, Carson Kelly.
I like Pete.
PCA's okay. Like, he's okay. Like,
he just hasn't been hitting well the second half of the season. No. But I like him.
Yeah. Dansby Swanson.
Dansby's never been a really good hitter, but he's a good fielder.
Yeah. You know, Matt Shaw. Like, you have guys. Like, this is a team, right? The whole is better than the sum of its parts. Like, who would you say the star is on this team? It's supposed to be Kyle Tucker, right?
Yes.
Eh. Didn't do it for me.
Pico Armstrong is pretty good too, but yeah.
He's the star of the future. But I mean, any team has a shot because every game is essentially a clean slate because, as the old adage goes, momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. But when you're rolling out a guy like Aaron Nola, right? The Cubs wish they had Cade Horton. They don't have Cade Horton. He's out. Right? It's pitching.
Perry Wood.
They wish they had Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, Greg Maddux, old or young. But yeah, I'm giving the underdogs a puncher's chance just because, you know, if you're there, you got a shot. You made it this far. But Milwaukee looks too good all the way around, and the Dodgers are the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Brewers are just a better team. I mean, this is what it comes down to. I think they went in a stretch during the summer where they went 38-16 at one point.
Yeah.
They've been sitting here waiting for the Cubs to come in, and they're thrashing them around. This is basically what's happening. And you would think the Cubs would have something going for them on the pitching side, but no, they're getting shot at it.
I mean, it's torched.
You're getting beat by a better team. There's nothing you could do about that. So, I mean, on the other side, I do believe the Phillies can hit as well as the Dodgers can hit. The problem is the Dodgers pitching and the Dodgers players are better, and they're just playing better right now. I mean, it was a game yesterday all the way up until the seventh inning where then the Dodgers put up three, and then the Phillies put up two, and then they put up another one, but it was too late, guys. Like you've got to play nine innings against this Dodger team, and you got to hit for nine innings. You just do. You've got to score six or seven runs. They're never out of it. They're always in it. The scary part is that it. I know you probably don't believe this, but I think they have turned it on for the postseason. They've understood what the postseason and what the regular season is, and they're on. Max Muncy fielding that bunt yesterday, turning and throwing to Betts and tagging out Nick Castellanos was like poetry in motion. Like they had been dead. Like that play has happened 17,000 times this year, and I think it's the first time it happened, and it was beautiful. The hits, Betts is hitting. You said Otani's not hitting, but Hernandez is hitting. Like Freeman's scoop at first base when Edmonds short armed the ball, for crying out loud. Then Tommy Edmonds hitting bombs. When Tommy Edmonds hitting bombs
this year,
and Freeman's not. They're healthy. Their hitters are healthy. Their pitching is not healthy, but their hitters are healthy. You've got to put runs up on them. I think it's over for both series, but if I wanted to give someone a chance to get back into it, I say the Phillies can hit just as well as they can. So I give the Phillies a chance, you know, to get it. Maybe it'll be a gentleman's sweep.
Possibly. But what concerns me about the Phillies is that starting rotation without Zach Wheeler. Yes, Sanchez. Yes, Suarez. I mean, Lizardo didn't pitch that badly.
He pitched very nice.
Yeah, Lizardo wasn't terrible.
He understood the task at hand, and he did it. He did what was asked of him, you know?
And the bullpen just didn't hold up.
But no bullpen can, Z. Not against the Dodgers. There is not a relief pitcher. There is not a bullpen left in Major League Baseball that's going to be able to go in and shut them down for four innings. It's not going to happen.
There's also no starting rotation that's going to go into the sixth inning. Who's left? Who's going into the sixth inning?
No.
Like, who's shortening the game?
That sounds awful. Like, to have to face these guys three and four times?
Yeah.
You're just like, oh my God, I can't believe this.
if you look at it, right, Christopher Sanchez didn't pitch poorly. Two runs, four hits, five and two-thirds innings. Right? David Robinson gave it up.
Robertson,
48-year-old David Robertson.
I've heard that story before,
right? So it's taxed, and the fact that you have Aaron. I mean, if there's one guy left who can, if he could reach back to what he used to be and deliver that complete game, it's Aaron Nola. But does he have it in him?
I'd say he gives up five runs in the first three innings.
I think he's torched. I think he gets into Max Fried territory.
I'm glad you brought up Max Fried here. So the Yankees were unexpectedly blown out in game one and in game two of Toronto, and they're currently getting blown out in game three here in the Bronx. So will Michael K finally have to admit that the Blue Jays are legit now?
Christ, you think so? Because the Yankee pitching certainly hasn't been legit.
What happened to Max Fried? You know, I didn't care that he went to the Yankees. I was fine with him going to the Yankees. He was a nice Brave. He won a World Series with us. It was good, you know. But I saw a Max Fried in game one that was just completely shocked. Yeah. Like he couldn't believe that his pitches were not getting to the catcher. Like, and it was like almost like he was running out of, like, I don't really have anything else. I don't know. It was like a throw here. And wow. Just wow. Like, I couldn't believe that happened.
I mean, you went with healing game one. That was a gamble. And that gamble did not pay off. You had Fried in game two. You figure, okay, like, I'm going to anchor with
He's going to write the ship. We're going to get back to New York. We'll be all right.
Yeah. And then everything is flat. Everything was absolutely flat. And they looked like they knew it was coming, right? They teed off like they knew it was coming. And
they knew it was coming. You're right.
I mean, no, some butthurt Yankee fans are actually throwing that conspiracy theory out there that in Rogers Center that because they have the hotel that they're like they're doing the old Brooklyn Dodger.
Michael K is saying this shit. He doesn't stop.
At some point, you have to acknowledge that you're getting your ass beat.
Yeah.
That Aaron Judge ain't it. He's not the guy.
All right. So hold on. So, you know, a lot of Judge is getting a lot of flack right now because
he
seems to get the hits in the early innings and doesn't seem to get the hits when the bases are loaded. You know, listen, this is who he is. He's still the best right-hand hitter of our generation. I'm not going to let that go. I mean, just because, you know, he's Mike Trouting it out there in the playoffs. He's not getting it done in the playoffs, but I still think he's a great hitter. He's not the vocal leader that this team needs right now. Is Shane Bieber pitching tonight? He plays for Toronto? When is
Shane
that
Bieber.
Happen?
Yeah. So Shane Bieber's pitching tonight. Making Shane Bieber look like he was in his prime when he was with the Guardians.
Well, he hasn't pitched all year, I don't think. He's just...
He came back from Tommy John, I think, in the middle. Like, he was a...
Right, in the middle of the season. Middle of the season.
Like, they made Trey Yesavage look like fucking Greg Maddux.
Yeah. What do you have? No hitter through five?
No hitter through five, 12 strikeouts. 12 strikeouts.
Guys, someone get up there and bunt, damn it.
Do something.
Right.
And it wasn't... Here's the thing. Like, I get it's an unorthodox, like, over-the-top Iron Mike type of pitching motion. You can't tell me that you have such little plate discipline that you couldn't lay off some of these pitches. Because you could fucking tell. You could tell it's going to be a ball. But you're pressing, you're squeezing the bat too tight, and you're in swing mode because everybody's trying to hit the 11-run homer.
Yeah.
The problem is there's no such thing as an 11-run homer. At some point, this has to be addressed, right?
Yeah,
the same way we talked about the Mets, right? The Mets squeeze their fucking bats too tight when it gets tough. When they sense pressure, they fold like a cheap suit. And the Yankees fold like cheap suits, too.
I'm not entirely a fan of their philosophy, the Yankees. That's the other problem with them, right? You know, when they were getting crushed... In game two, how about we start laying down some bunts? How about we start taking some pitches? Let's get this guy out of this game.
Work the count.
We can't hit him. So let's work the count. Let's all take a strike. Hell, let's take two strikes because we're not hitting it anyway, right?
Right.
So let's foul some stuff off. Let's make them work for this. Let's make them earn it. And it just like they just steamrolled them. And it's like almost like the Yankees like weren't expecting it, you know?
And what's kind of what I find interesting is that the Blue Jays left Bassett and left Scherzer off of this roster, right? You would think, you know, who would you rather have? A rookie, right? A rookie who pitched an A-ball this year or Max Scherzer? The Blue Jays chose a rookie who pitched an A-ball this year, who happens to be their top prospect.
But that also makes
them mowed them the fuck down. He mowed them down.
Yeah. No problem.
No problem. But the Yankees are having plenty of problems. They just scored again 6-2. But, you know, there's...
The only thing I'm going to say is they can hit two, just kind of like the Phillies. Like, I'm not counting the Yankees out. It's the third inning. They're playing in the Bronx. I'm not counting them out. But they can hit two. Both teams can hit. But
they can.
But the thing that got me about the Toronto series when they were in Toronto, I like your Yankee Cup, by the way.
Thank you.
I didn't expect the pitching to fail.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I knew the hitting was gonna be there. I didn't expect the pitching to fail to the degree it failed. Right. Mm. And that could be a problem not only in this round, but in next round, you know? And again, if there's any hope of beating a Dodger team, you know, that's going to be the number one thing you got to be able to do is pitch.
Absolutely. And if you look at it, it's been a failure of the starting rotation, and the bullpen's been awful too. Luke Weaver's been terrible. Terrible. And that's the worst possible thing that could happen to him as he's entering his free agency.
You can't put Devin Williams in the game. Like, we just got to be a little smart. They got to be a little smarter. Like I said, I'm not counting the Yankees out. I think they're going to, you know, play hard in this game, and we will see what happens. When owning a home, it's important to have heating and cooling professional available when things go wrong. AirCare Technicians is a veteran-owned HVAC company servicing the Westchester area. They are licensed to service, repair, maintenance, and replace all HVAC units. If your unit is not running properly or you would like to improve the air quality in your home, contact AirCare Technicians for a free quote. They offer same-day and emergency services for all of your needs. You can reach them at 914-315-1547. AirCare Technicians, 914-315-1547. Now, moving on to football. The Cardinals and the Titans came down to the wire as Tennessee edged out the Cards to get their first win of the season. However, that was not the main storyline. So Cardinals running back Amari DiMicardo was heading into the end zone on a 72 or 76 yard go-ahead score, but he let the ball go just shy of crossing the goal line to start his celebration. On the sideline, head coach Jonathan Gannon went after the running back, got in his face, and slapped him hard twice in his shoulder pads. Since then, Gannon has publicly apologized and apologized to DiMicardo in a team meeting. So, Z, how out of line was Gannon?
He was also fined by the organization, too.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, okay. He was fined by the team. So, they think he was certainly out of line. $100K was that fine?
Wow.
$100K. So how can you not say that Gannon was out of line, right? Now, this is, you have to take into account, this is the new generation of player, right? They're not going to take to the smacks on the helmet. They're not going to take to that sort of stuff. The physical, you can't put your hands on the player, right? So that is inexcusable, right? That becomes a non-negotiable. You're yeah, in deep shit.
Right.
But he did what every fan wanted him to do, and he did what probably every one of DiMicardo's teammates wanted to do. So, like, I understand his frustration because that is horseshit. Hold the goddamn ball until you get over the goddamn goal line. It's not hard.
You know what's interesting? It's like, you know, we watch football every single weekend.
Yes.
And you just are just so surprised at some of the shit you see sometimes. Like, you just, I mean, to run 72, 76 yards and then let it go right before the... Why could you run all the way through to the back of the end zone, get all the way to the mat against the wall, and then do whatever you want to do? Why would you let the ball go? What is that about? I've never let the ball go when I crossed the goal line. It always went through the goal line.
Yes.
Most of the time, just hand the ball to the referee.
That's
but,
it.
You know, a couple of times I threw the ball and maybe spiked it, but never have just dropped it.
No.
Drop it. Just drop it.
Absolutely not. And
I mean,
you know,
I felt for him. I felt for him, and you can see that he was, you know, he was hurting on the side. That's the part that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Was he wasn't like, he was feeling terribly bad.
Yes.
About what he did. He was feeling terribly bad about himself that another teammate was consoling him.
Yeah.
At the time, and that's when the coach came by and did what he did.
Yes.
That was the problem I had. Like, you know, if he came off the field and took off his helmet and was like, I can't, like, you know, being maybe immature about it or being a jerk about it, okay, I could kind of get behind your approach at that point. But he was devastated. And
yeah,
this is a guy that doesn't get this opportunity all the time either.
Right.
And instead of using it as a good teaching moment, the coach went after him. And granted, like you said, he did what every fan probably wanted to do.
You son of a bitch.
And there was and there was a level, I'm sure if you were a gambler or if you were a fantasy owner, you were feeling it too. But
yeah,
there's a level of frustration that we got to see with the head coach.
Yes. Right?
And you can see that the pressure that he's under is getting to him, right? He's not being able to control himself because he's got a second baseman for a quarterback. Yeah. He's got a top wide receiver that's not catching the ball, and they're losing to the fucking Tennessee Titans who don't have a win, right? So he's got a lot of pressure on him, but, that's what it's all about being a head coach, right?
Yeah.
That's you got to be able to walk over to DeMarcado and talk to the kid. He's a kid. Talk to him. Say, I know that will never happen again, right?
Yes.
And put him right back out.
Exactly.
Because now he's going to run harder and better than ever. You know, I think I've told this story before, but I had a manager one time who used to yell and scream and rip people out. And then I had somebody come over to me and say, you know, that doesn't make it any better. That doesn't get things done faster or better. You know, that's not going to make things better. You know, making things better would be more understanding and more concerned with people's feelings. And he seemed like a good kid. He seems like a nice player. You know, I hope it doesn't ruin his career. And I hope the coach learns something from this, too.
Well, he already issued a public apology, so that definitely seems to be trending in the right direction. But that wasn't even the worst play of the game for the Cardinals, right?
You're talking about when Kyler Murray caught the ball and hit him in his face and he almost fell down?
When he got concussed from the snap? No, that wasn't even the worst.
That was hilarious.
The pick fumbled into the end zone for the game-losing touchdown.
Oh, I didn't even see that part of it.
They picked off Cam Ward. And then they fumble the pick. And then Tennessee recovers. Cardinals lose. It was a bad game all the way around. Yes, you know, you lost to the winless Titans who hadn't had a pulse all year. And coach is losing the cool on the sidelines. The player is worrying about his touchdown celebration before he even crosses the goal line. So it's one to forget. That's one to forget if you're an Arizona Cardinal. If you're an Arizona Cardinal fan, if you're Jonathan Gannon, if you're DeMarcado, you have to grow from it. You have to, especially for him. Like, this was on public display, right? Public display, not just of the gaffe, but the reaction to the gaffe.
Yes.
So, he has two ways to go about this. He can let it define him, or he can move forward. Now, the coach, same thing. He can let this define him, or he can move forward. And how do you do that together? Like, that's the thing. You're a team. You're the leader of men.
Yeah.
I was talking about...
I think with all the woes that they're having in Arizona to start the season, I don't see Jonathan Gannon getting up from this one.
I don't know. I mean, like, time will tell. I mean, they've been improving under Jonathan Gannon. It seems to have steadily improved, but expectations are starting to rise. You know, you have all this collected talent, and you supposedly have the quarterback in the second baseman. Like, you have the wideout, you have a defense. You had James Conner, but now James Conner's hurt. So there's a vacuum.
Oh, and Trey Benson's hurt too, amazingly.
Yeah. So, like, there's opportunity to be had here, but you have the opportunity as Coach Gannon, as the leader of men, to pull everybody in the right direction, and instead, you decided that was the time to try and beat Joe Hardass on the sideline.
You're letting your emotions get the best of you, and you're not supposed to do that. That's not how this is supposed to go. But moving on, Lupus, otherwise known as the New York Jets, they lost again on Sunday, this time getting blown out by the Dallas Cowboys. So, Z, is this season part of some plan, or will Aaron Glenn not make it through the season?
How about them Cowboys? You got Jerry Jones flipping the bird to fans.
$250,000 fine.
That's an expensive finger.
Off the fans. But what could the fans possibly be saying to them? They're 0-5. Like, why are you even listening to them? Why is it anything they say matter? They're 0-5. They can't beat. They They can't even get an onside kick right. Why would you onside kick when you know the Dallas Cowboys kicker could kick it from, like, the logo?
Right.
I didn't understand the onside kick. I didn't understand it.
And what is the what's the percentage now for onside kick recoveries? It's got to be, like, less than 1%.
Probably.
It's such a low percentage play now that unless you watermelon kick it, and it's got to be, like, perfect. That's the only way you're going to get that back.
But the other thing I wanted to share is, you know, the 49ers with Mac Jones won their game this past week. They beat an LA Rams team. They went up to LA to play them with Mac Jones, and none of the starting receivers were able to play in the game. He was throwing to Kendrick Bourne. Yeah, that guy.
Former teammate with New England.
The 49ers are paying Mac Jones $8 million for 2 years.
Yeah.
Now, the New York Jets, who are 0-5, are paying Justin Fields $40 million for 2 years. What? No wonder why he signed there. This sounds wonderful. I'll do it. I'll do it for free. So, Z, after watching that game and talking to friends of mine that are Jet fans, I'm taking their feelings and emotions out of this, but I do think that this is part of a plan, okay? I think that they're trying to be the next Detroit Lions. So, if you remember, Dan Campbell came into the Lions. They sucked.
Yes.
Then, the next year, they got a little better. Then, the third year, they were really good. And then the fourth year. So I think that that's what this has to be. Because you go out there and you watch Breece Hall fumbling. Gosh, fumbling the football. Like, every week, it's a different running back fumbling the football at a key moment. Aaron Glenn's going to have to wear two pair of gloves in practice this week.
I forgot about like, that.
I don't understand. And then you take him out and you put in Isaiah Davis. But what are we doing? Like, if you're not going to play him, then trade him because you're losing him at the end of the year. I don't know how many times I have to come on this show and say to the New York Jets, if you are not going to run Breece Hall into the ground and be a ground and pound team, then trade him because you get nothing if you don't let him go. If you don't trade him for a fourth round pick, trade him for a fifth round pick. Trade him for a ham sandwich at this point. There's no point in not playing him because
the Cardinals
he fumbled.
Can use a running back.
Fuck it, just put him out there. Yeah, the Cardinals, hell, call the fucking Bengals. They're making stupid decisions. Call the Patriots. They're making stupid. Call somebody in your division. Like, come on, stop. Stop being petty. Play him. Mike Vrabel might be the meanest football coach in the National Football League right now. Ramondre Stevenson has a fumbling problem this year. He's fumbled 3 times.
Yeah.
Guess who gets the ball on the goal line?
Ramondre
Stevenson, because yeah. He's their running back. I don't give a shit if you fumble. Just don't do it anymore. Stop doing it. We don't have anybody else to replace you right now. Put in Trayvon Henderson, so go out there and score the damn touchdown. He scored all their running touchdowns this past weekend.
Even though they
have a rookie. He doesn't care. He's like, I don't care.
And Antonio Gibson's done for the year. Tore his ACL.
Yeah, whatever, man. This is what we got. Go out there and run the football. Don't do it again. Don't fumble. What am I going to say?
I think.
And is it just me, or has Sauce Gardner not progressed as a defender?
No, he's completely regressed.
He's not. I don't know if he's regressed, but it feels like he hasn't progressed. He hasn't learned anything. Like he hasn't become better.
No,
you know, And it's the defense.
No one gets better when they're a Jet. No one gets better.
You have an opportunity at the end of the half to run out the clock. You wind up messing up and having to kick the ball back to the Cowboys. Instead of the Cowboys running the clock, they ran 50 yards and scored a fucking touchdown. That can't happen, man. No. That can't happen.
Like, they have a porous offensive line. They don't have CeeDee Lamb, and Javonte Williams runs for 135, and Dak Prescott throws for 4 touchdowns. Like, that, there you go. So, this team, what did we say last week? You don't, I mean, Robert Saleh was a rah-rah guy. He was a head cheerleader with a shiny,
still is.
With a shiny still head, is. Right? That was Robert Saleh. But he had a defensive identity. You knew what this fucking team was. What is this? What is this?
What are we doing?
What are we doing? What is this?
We can't tackle. We can't stop people. We go off sides.
How many penalties? How many more goddamn penalties? They are, if not the most undisciplined team, one of the most undisciplined teams in the league. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And, you know, Aaron Glenn trying to do his Joe Hardass routine about how, like, we're going to hold people to a higher standard. They cut Gibson. They cut the other kick returner. But he's fucking high-stepping down the goddamn sideline. Like, dude, this isn't it. Like, you're going nowhere, and you're going nowhere fast. And you've gone from screaming at them, screaming at your teammate, at your team, rather. And now it's gone to the, we'll look at it. We'll look at it.
Yeah, we'll
defeated.
Look at, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's...
Is he really broken after five games? Did they break him?
I think he's realized he made a terrible, terrible decision. I mean, because even Detroit's playing better, I feel like, now. But
Aiden Hutchinson made him look so good. I said it to you on Sunday.
I have to believe that there's a plan. There's a grand plan. And the grand plan is we're going to model what the Detroit Lions did the last 5 years. And we're going to do that with Aaron Glenn because he's been through it and he saw that whole thing come together, and he's going to be the one to bring this whole thing together. That has to be the plan, because the way they're playing, the way they look, jeez, like, jeez. Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. Like, the Lions at least had a forward trajectory. They had Matthew Stafford. You had, like, what do you have to hang your hat on here? Breece Hall's going to leave. Justin Fields isn't Jared Goff, right? You're not...
No.
There's no Jared Goff trade to be had, right? Is your goal to be that bad to get the number one pick? And which quarterback are you taking? You're taking Raiola? You're taking Arch Manning? Like, who are you taking? Who is this year's savior? Like, who's coming to save you now?
I mean, I would argue, Z, that if they were to get a first... If they were to get the number one overall pick, their best thing to do would be to trade him.
But do you trust the people in charge to make a good trade?
Yeah, I trust them to get good draft picks. Yeah, sure. I do. Do not take a quarterback. Do not take a quarterback. You want to take the best defensive player? Like Detroit did?
Mm-hmm.
You could do that. But do not take a quarterback. You can't protect him. You don't have the people down there to help him get better. So that's my two cents on that.
It's just, it's more of the same. It's more of the same from this organization. Sold a bill of goods. They can't deliver. They can't back it up. And, you know, the fans are already pissed off, and it's over and done with.
For all you grill masters, green thumbers, DIY aficionados, and home repair heroes in the Richmond, Virginia area, if you're looking for personal service quality products and a convenient shopping experience, then look no farther than Thacker Ace Hardware in Colonial Heights. Owner Don Rackley and his team of local experts have everything you need to tackle every project around the house. I'm talking Benjamin Moore paint, Milwaukee and Craftsman power tools, plumbing, electric, hardware, the works. For you green thumbers, their nursery department is top notch, and I wouldn't be me if I didn't mention the grills. They have Weber, Blackstone, Big Green Egg, Traeger. I want one of everything. Give them a call today at 804-766-4223 and see how they can assist you. Or swing by 27 Dunlop Village in Colonial Heights. That's Thacker Ace Hardware, 804-766-4223, or swing by 27 Dunlop Village in Colonial Heights. Thacker Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
Well, sticking with New York Jet players,
oof.
Former Jets quarterback and current Fox color man Mark Sanchez was arrested in Indianapolis over the weekend for getting into a fight with a truck driver, allegedly over a parking spot. The Fox broadcaster was apparently drunk and stabbed the 69-year-old truck driver repeatedly after trying to get into his truck multiple times. I've read and listened to so many parts of this story that I just can't believe it's true. But it's true, because Mark Sanchez had to post bail today.
Oof.
And will go back to Indianapolis on November 4th to be arraigned. So, yeah, this happened. And what do you think of this story?
It's a class 5 felony. He can get 1 to 6 years in prison for this.
And if you see the condition the truck driver's in, you think he may be going to jail. Because he really roughed this guy up. And the guy roughed him up.
Oh, he got stabbed 3 times.
The guy maced him.
Yeah.
And Mark was able to wipe it off and continue to fight and scrap and stab a 69-year-old man. Do you think this man knew he was Mark Sanchez? I'm trying to put myself into this man's shoes. Like, trying to think about, like, if Boomer Esiason was trying to, like, fight me over a parking spot. Like, at what point I'm like, is this really happening right now? Like,
it's like, should I ask Boomer, him for an just autograph?
Take it. Just take the truck, take the parking spot, take the cooking grease, take everything. Like, what are we doing right now?
That's the other thing. Like, the absurdity of it all. The absurdity of it all. You just hit the nail on the head. The guy was he was picking up used cooking oil. Okay? Mark Sanchez.
I'm not trying to make light of this situation.
Oh, no. I'll do it.
But the story.
It's absurd. It
doesn't add up. Like, if you're the cop, right? And you're writing the report. And you're like. Mark Sanchez did what?
Well, no. He's
trying to get into my truck. He tried to stab me like 3 times.
But hang tight. Hang tight.
I maced him in the eyes. He got back up. He started fighting me again. You're like. The Jets court.
Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry, but it's terrible. It's terrible.
It's awful.
But,
it's absolutely awful.
But when you tell this story, Z, it just. Let's say you and I went to a bar.
Yes.
Okay? And let's say I got out of hand. Like, I was drinking and I was just being stupid. Wouldn't you be like, hey, man, it's time to go?
Yes.
Or, hey, let's go upstairs. Hey, man, let's get out of here. Like, where? Who was Mark Sanchez drinking with?
That's a good question.
They didn't tap him on the shoulder like, Mark, yo, we got to go. Like, you know, that's it, man. That's it. Wrap it up. Like, cut him off. How about the bartender cutting him off?
Yeah.
Cut him off, man. Cut this guy off. Like, that's from the same perspective of, like, what's happening? What?
There's so much that we need to cover here. And there's so much.
Downtown Indianapolis, it's not like they were even, like, in a booming city,
right?
Or Las Vegas, or, you know, like, you know, Columbia or something. They're in downtown Indianapolis, where he's there for work. He's going to be calling the game on Sunday.
Right. So
how did this escalate so quickly? Like, what, how did it go from here to here?
Clearly, you know, and I don't want to make light of this. Clearly he has an issue with alcohol. But clearly there's an issue there. Now, I don't know if there's a mixture of alcohol and drugs. Like, I don't know that part. But here's what I do know. It's documented that he's on camera doing wind sprints in the alley.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah. So he's doing wind sprints in the alley. So you're already...
Prior to assaulting the truck driver.
Prior to. So you're not in your right... He's already not in his right mind, and it sounds like he's either, like, gone, or he's trying to sober up.
Oh, okay.
So...
Okay, maybe that... I don't...
So that says something already. Then the truck comes, cooking grease, the whole thing. It's like, you can't park here. The owner of the hotel said, you can't park here. And he's trying to get him to move, right? Okay, parking spot disputes happen, right? The getting into the cab of the truck.
Right.
What are you trying to move this truck of used cooking oil? Like, that part. Being maced. Somehow, like, pulling a Haku and, like, swear, you know, like, no selling the mace. Just keep moving forward, getting stabbed.
It's all on video.
It's all on video,
and there are eyewitnesses. Like, the only thing that could maybe save him is that he was blackout drunk and doesn't remember anything, right? That's the only thing that could really save him right now. He's lost so much from this. He's definitely lost his job with Fox.
Now
he's got the butt fumble and this on his resume, right? He's going to jail. He has a drinking problem.
Yes.
Like, this is... When I first read it, like, I was like, oh, man, he got stabbed? That's terrible. Like, I thought he was assaulted, right?
And then but stories... that was the fault of the media, man. Like, if you look at X and you look at guys like Adam Schefter, it was framed that he was... And it's an attempted robbery was one of the stories.
That's what I heard too. Yeah. Right. And then the more this started coming out, it's like, wait a minute. He was the aggressor?
What is going on here?
How old is this man? 69 years old over a parking spot?
Yeah. A 38-year-old guy stabbed a 69-year-old man.
In downtown Indianapolis over a parking spot and cooking grease.
Yes. Make it make sense.
Sounds like a jet already.
And, you know, the media tried to hijack the story by trying to, you know, paint Sanchez in a sympathetic light. Dan Dockich tried to make this a race and family argument that somehow, you know... Because there are so many young men of color who are fatherless, and it's just fucking absurd, dude. This has nothing to do with the fact that Mark Sanchez was drunk doing wind sprints in the goddamn alleyway on the side of the hotel.
What are you doing here, man?
It's like, can I have an autograph? Like,
he used to play for the Jets. Get out of the. Get your truck out of here.
Is that why he stabbed him? You son of a bitch. How dare
again,
you?
We are not joking. Two people got hurt. Yes, and this is definitely serious. But this is
absolutely
this story is just so absurd. It's just so absurd that this happened. That it's almost unbelievable. It's unbelievable that it happened.
And frankly, Sanchez is lucky the guy's not dead. Because if he was dead,
he's in bad shape. Though.
Yeah.
And thoughts and prayers with him, and hopefully he can get better and make a full recovery. Because again, this is an athlete. Like Mark Sanchez is an athlete, and he looks like he's still in shape. Not that he's in playing shape, but he's a quarterback. Like he's a pretty big dude.
Yeah.
And to take on an older man like this in this manner, we have so much at stake. You have so much to lose by this. I guess the other part sad about it is like he didn't have a friend there to help him.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't have someone there to pull him out.
A friend, a co-worker, anybody.
Or even someone who worked for that hotel.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was at the Marriott, I think.
Yeah.
Or someone to be like, Mark, you need to go to bed. I'm calling you. Or you need to go upstairs.
Yeah.
Or you need to get an Uber. You need to get out of here.
Like, right.
Like someone to be the adult and de-escalate the situation. Right,
exactly. Like I heard Aqib Talib talking about the time he got arrested. There was downtime in between. He got in on a Friday, games on Sunday, he got Saturday. And he and two of his teammates got blackout drunk. They were in an Uber. He was like yelling on the phone. The driver's like, "Can you please turn the volume down? Can you please turn the volume down? Can you please and then Talib punched him in the face.
Oh.
So then he woke up in the drunk tank.
Oh.
So that was a story I just saw today on, I believe, Stephen A. Smith, I believe. But, it's also the lack of the downtime. You came in on the Friday. You got nothing to do. right? You have you're just kind of parachuting in. That's rough. That's absolutely rough. And if nobody's there to kind of guide you through this process, especially if somebody who has a negative relationship with alcohol, which, I mean, we don't know that Mark Sanchez has a negative relationship. We can only infer that based on this behavior, that he has a his bad relationship with alcohol. But, you know, as it is absurd. It's absolutely absurd. We're making light of it a little bit, but, you know, there is a serious element to it, and we just hope that the 69-year-old man, the truck driver, that he recovers. Right. We also help. I also hope that Mark Sanchez gets his life together. You know,
he's really taking a tumble here. He's taking a fall.
He has.
He's taking a fall,
and it was his own fault. Like we definitely like admit that. Like we're stipulating that there is absolutely no excuse for the behavior, but you absolutely hope that he gets the help he needs, because clearly he's in dire need of help.
Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto, we really care about what's under your hood.
It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG @faderoutepodcast, or drop us a line on X @FadeRouteDNZ, and you could be next.
Joining us on the In Route today, we have the president of the Sports Business Research Network and the host of My First Job in Sports podcast, Neil Schwartz. Thanks for coming on, Neil.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. As long as I don't have to run a real fade route, I'm okay. You know, kind of a short, old, slow guy, you know, but I get it.
That was part of the last part of the interview, is actually running a post pattern into it, but that's okay.
We will Patreon exclusive. That's what we were hoping for.
Appreciate that. I'm good with data and all that kind of stuff, but you know, catching a football, not really my thing. Although it was when I was in like junior high school and I was a kid. I mean,
those
I
intangibles have left you, huh?
The
intangibles
well, the problem have left is you. Everybody grew and I didn't.
Yeah,
I even tried out as a kicker. You know, hey. That's where the money.
That's where the money is.
Right?
That's where the money is. I wish I would go back and be a kicker or a long snapper. I'd be in great shape. Well, we'll start you off with this. You know, your market research is unmatched in the world of sports, and SBRNet has a corporate and academic element. Can you explain how SBRNet supports academic institutions and students in studying the sports industry?
You know, it would help, I guess, first if I took a little bit of a step back and explained about what SBRNet's all about. Of course, we're the SBRNet, which is Sports Business Research Network. And we're really focused on the business side of sports. You know, I couldn't tell you the best lineup to put out there, you know, at the end of a game, or I couldn't tell you which pitcher is the best one to have at the end of a playoff game like last night. That's not what I do. What we do is that we provide data that really drives things like sponsorship, revenue development, ticket sales, really everything that revolves around the business side of sports. And that's really our niche. So within the academic community, we do provide a lot of data. And the reason why we do that is, look, data is everywhere. I mean, it's hard to do anything without data anymore. And you know what? Most college professors teaching sports management, sports marketing, anything in the deal with sports, they know that data and data analytics is a big part of the business. So in order to do analytics and data analytics, the first part of that expression is data. Yay. So we provide data that helps people do those type of analytics, specifically focused on the business side of sports. But we also provide data in the commercial world, like teams, leagues, brands, advertising agencies. Look, everybody wants to be able to understand their market, but they also want to understand the competitor. And so we give them the data or the market intelligence they need in order to be able to make better marketing decisions. And how do you do that? You do that by incorporating data, and you do it by using data the right way. And you know what? When you put data together the right way and you put, you know, a good data plan together, you know, it makes everything else go easy. And that's really what we're all about, providing you the data you need to help you get the job done.
So are there specific tools or resources that are particularly popular among the students or the faculty?
Well, you know, like everything else, I think, Damien, there's different like levels of, you know, engagement with data. You know, you've got, I talk to grad students and I talk to, you know, some of these kids that are just whiz kids with, you know, data analytics. They're using some of the more advanced tools. You know, they're coding in Python. They're using something called RStudio. Microsoft has a thing called Microsoft Power BI. There's an app called Tableau. Yeah. I mean, right now, I would have to say is the golden years of data. You know, number one, that there are just so many tools that are out there right now. But, you know, when you have a lot of tools, when you have a lot of data, you know what? It means you've got a lot more to get your arms around. And that means you've got to really be able to understand, you know, good data from bad data, how to use it properly, where does data fit into the process that I'm doing. When I talk about using data, I have these, look, I love my cliches and my metaphors, I have to admit. But the one cliche or actually metaphor that I use is that using data is a lot like making soup. Look, I don't know if either one of you guys cook or watched your moms or grandmoms cook and all that. I love
Z's
to cook.
Z's a cook.
Yes, I am.
I mean, I love to cook, and my mom was an amazing cook. My grandmother, not so much. But my mom could cook. Man, could she cook. But I used to help her in the kitchen and all that. And actually, I worked in for 4 summers, I worked in a commercial kitchen at a summer camp. And I know how to cook. But the one thing I know about cooking is you follow a recipe. And you follow the recipe and you put in your main ingredients like a chicken or some beef or whatever it might be. And then you add your vegetables and then you start with your spices. But the idea is that working with data is a lot like making soup, because you don't want to just focus, let's say, on one source to get your data. You want to be able to look at a variety of different sources and then determine how much of this do I want to use? How much of that do I want to use? So that's why I use that soup analogy when I talk to students, and I even talk to my commercial clients about the right way to use data. Some of them really get a kick out of it. I kind of get a kick out of it sometimes. But, you know, it's really important to be able to get your arms around, you know, what's going on with data. There's just so much of it, just so much. And you talk to teams, they are just inundated with data. And some cases they know how to use it. Some cases they don't, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I actually work for Publicis Media, so we use Tableau, and there's a whole bunch of, we have a whole data analytics team that you know, try to find a way to use the data to fit the story, right? It's all about telling a story and how you're going to sell the product or get your points across to clients or get it across to vendors and what have you. One of the things I'm curious, is there a notable student project or research that's come out of using your platform that you kind of, you know, talk to people about or kind of highlight?
There's been so many that, I mean, you know, I'll just highlight a couple of my favorites. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites involves the Phoenix Coyotes. You know who those guys were, right?
Yeah.
They're now called the Utah Mammoth. Boy, I hate that name.
Terrible.
Okay, so I was working with a group of students, higher level, junior, seniors at NYU. In fact, I was working with a professor who is considered one of the leaders in machine learning and was really a early adopter for AI and really understanding how to use data. And, you know, he actually worked for a quantitative based hedge fund. So he really knew his stuff. So he came at me with a couple of project ideas, and I came at him with one. I said, here's a really interesting project. We've got a situation in Phoenix, Arizona, where we've got a failing NHL franchise. It's like, what do you mean? I said, well, look at the data. They have no fans. They just got thrown out of their arena, so they have no place to play. You know, they're playing in some goofy small arena. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And, you know, and it was a losing franchise. So I said, let's determine where we think the Phoenix Coyotes would be best off in terms of moving. And we did this incredible project. The young lady that worked with it, her name was Chloe Kim. She did an incredible job. And we actually came up with three options.
Okay.
And we presented it at one of the big sports marketing conferences. And everybody said, wow, what an interesting way to use data. Because we literally did a database presentation on where do you move a failing NHL franchise? Okay, so you ready? Here's where we determine. Here's where we made our move. You want to take a shot at where we said? And it's not, by the way, Salt Lake City did not come in the top two.
Yeah,
it did come in the top three, but not the top two. Number one, drum roll, please. Houston, Texas.
I was going to say Houston, Texas. Yeah.
Right? Really? See, that would have been... That's funny that you would have said that. Any particular reason why you would have said it? Now the teacher in me is coming out.
The growing market. You have the baseball. You have football. You have the three sports.
Yes.
There's a fan base there.
Exactly right. You're exactly right. There's a fan base there. The fans, they know how to be sports fans. The demographics were right. The volume of fans were there. And they also had some great facilities already in place. So that is also another thing, another variable. Now, the second option. Anybody want to take a shot at that one? Come on, Damian. This is all you, buddy.
Oh,
Z got
man.
His right. What do you think?
I don't know. Let me go with
I'm doing the
Jefferson. Not like South Carolina, right?
No, not at all. The second choice market was Indianapolis.
Okay. That makes sense.
Okay.
And for a couple of reasons. Number one, Z said it also, great sports market. You know, you've got obviously the Colts and the Pacers that are really driving a lot, but you've also got a lot going on around the area. You know, you've got things going on. I mean, Columbus obviously has an NHL franchise, but there's a lot of great university activities. Again, it's got a market that has a great sports history and has facilities. So again, those were our two main choices. Third one was Salt Lake City. I have to tell you, I was not so high on Salt Lake City. I'll tell you why. Salt Lake City does not have what I like to call the heritage that a lot of markets have when it comes to sports fans. I'll give you an example. And the best example I can give you is one I was watching right now. In fact, the Florida Panthers, who I'm a season ticket holder, so there's a little bit of bias going on here. But one of the reasons why hockey in Florida has been so successful, frankly, is because of all the New Yorkers that have moved down here over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, they came down as Rangers fans, as Devils fans, as Islander fans. I hate the Islanders fans. I hate the Ranger fans, too, for that matter. But they come down here with their fandom in place. You know, and what they were able to do is they were able to transfer a lot of that fandom over to the Florida Panthers here in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. And also the Tampa Bay area. So again, great markets, you know, and that's one area. We're working on something really interesting right now with a grad school program actually down here in Florida. Are you guys Formula One fans?
I'm not. I actually have a student who's like obsessed with Formula One. And we used to talk about, she was trying to guess my age by the fact that I knew who Michael Schumacher was. So...
I know who Michael Schumacher is.
Of course, yeah.
But the thing I guess I wanted to say is that Formula One right now is just growing incredibly quickly. Now, it has leveled off a little bit, but it's growing incredibly quickly for two main reasons. Number one is the show on Netflix, Drive to Survive. It really captured the imagination, not just of racing fans, but of millennials, Gen Z. It captured people that never would have associated themselves to auto racing, including me, by the way. I am not a fan of auto racing by any stretch of the word. I have been to the Indianapolis 500, by the way. It is a wonderful spectacle, but I am not an auto racing fan by any stretch of the word. But one of the things we knew is that Drive to Survive has really been able to prop up Formula One. But the other thing that's propped it up is that there are now three races here in the United States. There was really only one for a long time. It was in It was in Texas, and all of a sudden I'm having a brain fart here. In God, I forgot the name of the Boston. Yeah. It was in Austin, Texas. They had built a race course out in an old airport. I mean, that's the perfect scenario.
Yeah.
But what did they do? They decided to put two more races in the United States, and they picked probably the two best destination markets that you can think of: Las Vegas and Miami. Mm.
Yeah. For
different reasons, I might add. But both markets have been, I would say, fairly successful. Okay, now Formula One's looking for a fourth market for their next race. Why? Next year, an American team will join the group. Right now, there's 10 teams, no American teams. Although there is one team that is headquartered here in America, they aren't really an American team. They will add an 11th team next year from Cadillac.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, Formula One is looking at the U.S. market as a potential place for a fourth race. Well, where would you put it? How would you use data in order to determine where to put the next great Formula One race? And you know what? This is an amazing, this is going to be an amazing project, because it really brings together all of the things that data can do. One, you can understand Formula One fans from a targeting standpoint. Two, you can look at your competitors, NASCAR, IndyCar. You can look and see where your comparisons are, where you're the same, where you're different. But then you can also start looking at, how can I go find those fans geographically? Where are they located?
Yeah.
In what region of the country do I want this? Do I want to do it in California? By the way, they thought about California. Los Angeles turned them down already. Stan Kroenke, the guy who built SoFi Stadium, owner of the Rams,
they
already turned them down.
Hmm.
But there are some other great markets where, you know, they could do this race. And, you know, the question is, of course, is it a street race? Is it a, you know, is some other market willing to build a race course in, let's say, an abandoned airport or something like that? I don't know the answer to that, but it's a wonderful project. It really is. Hmm. You know, if they hadn't had a race already in Miami, I would have said Orlando would have been a great spot. You know, talk about a destination.
Yeah.
I mean, geez. You know, Disney, you know, is like one of the number one tourist destinations in the, not just the country.
Don't they have a racetrack? Yeah, don't they have a racetrack in Disney World too? I feel like they have one somewhere, like near Magic Kingdom or something.
I don't think they've got a racetrack that's got that kind of capacity and that kind of amenity. I mean, there's, you know, look, they've done an amazing job. I'm here in Miami. They've used the stadium, Hard Rock Stadium. And Steve Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins and the stadium, have done an amazing job of retrofitting that area for the race. Las Vegas is different. Las Vegas is a straight road race. So they literally race.
Wild.
You know, they're racing right down the strip.
It's wild.
And
it's wild.
The city, the people that live there, absolutely friggin' hate
it. Yeah, I bet.
But you know, the casinos, they love it.
Oh,
they're
jammed
with gambling. Yeah, they're jammed with people.
Anything to get more people into that
you
town,
bet.
For sure.
You bet. That's why sports has been so, I think, well-received and done so well in Las Vegas. I mean, you've got the Raiders that are doing really well, the Golden Knights that are doing really well. They're going to put a baseball team. The Oakland Athletics looks like they're headed there. And I guess the last one to be filled in is going to be the NBA. But, you know, Vegas has shown that, you know, their fans, but, you know, will support professional sports. They also support gambling. We'll talk about that maybe on another part of the show.
Well, it's funny you bring up the NBA, because, you know, taking a look at the SBR Net 2025 Sports Fandom Top Line Report, I was surprised to see the WNBA's live attendance and fandom rise over the last 2 years. Is that all due to Caitlin Clark, or can the NBA take some credit for that as well?
I don't think the NBA really deserves much of the credit for that, if you want to know the truth.
Okay.
I do think the women that are playing in that sport deserve a lot of the kudos. Look, let's take a step back. The numbers are amazing.
Yeah,
there is no sports league that is growing faster than the WNBA. And by the way, it's created a little bit of a halo effect for the NWSL, the Women's Soccer League. The Super League or the USL.
And I'm a downer. I'm a downer on the WNBA. But after looking at your numbers, your numbers tell me I'm wrong. They tell me that it's on the rise.
Well, there's a couple of reasons why also. Number one, the fan base is interesting. They're young. They're family oriented, and the tickets are a lot cheaper,
affordable,
than they are for an NBA game. You can take a family of four to a WNBA game, I would almost say, for under $100.
I was looking at it, actually.
Maybe some extras, but you can't take a family of four to an NBA game for $100. No. You'd be lucky to take a family of one.
Yeah, we go on comps.
So, Neil, you believe this? WNBA Finals game, $35 ticket. For WNBA Finals, the Finals.
So, so parents take their two kids. So you got $35, that's $150 right there. Maybe they spend another $50 or so on food, maybe a little bit more. Parking, you know, I pay $40 to park at the Panthers games, at the playoff games. It's like $30 during the regular season. But again, you know, the WNBA probably doesn't get that number. But the thing that the WNBA has done really good, guys, is that they have done, in my opinion, a great job of marketing their stars. And they understand the value that these stars have with their social media audiences. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, you know, and then of course you've got some of the other stars that are out there that have been able to, they have empowered their stars like no other sport has. Maybe with the exception of the NFL and Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. That's a whole other, that's a story for another day or maybe another part of the show. But the NBA has taken it upon themselves to make the players the stars. And the players have embraced this really well. You know, they're really good with, they do a lot of appearances with kids. They do a lot of clinics. They do, you know, a lot of things in game and in stadium to focus on families. You know, it's much more of a family oriented kind of game. Money, affordable.
Well, that's why I usually like even going to the minor league games. I like taking my boys to those games, especially when we go to Florida. My in-laws have a place in Port Charlotte. They're close to a minor league team. And, you know, it's great. You know, sometimes when we go in the summer, it's free. Just got to pay for parking, and you get, like, a, you know, chips and a hot dog. And then the players are engaging, which is great, you know, for my kids. They like, you know, you get a ball, you get to run the bases. You know, you get
early enough, you get to talk to the players, you know, exactly. Batting practice.
Yeah. Much more of a family feel. Not so aggressive, you know, because we're in New York, so I'm not going to take my kid to a Yankee game or a Met game. You know, people cursing, people getting out of control over a baseball game, it's just not that serious at this point. So I'd rather just go to a minor league game. I don't mind taking them to the Brooklyn Cyclones game, too. Those are fun. So big on family stuff.
I do think the MLS has tried to do some of that. Unfortunately, I think some of that has gotten away from them. If you want to know the truth, I think they got into the money game, the money part of it. I mean, you know, I hate to say, you know, as they acquired some of these, Messi is a good example. I mean, look, Messi's the GOAT. There's no question about it. He's the Michael Jordan of soccer, football, excuse me. But, you know, again, you know, as they have increased their payrolls, I mean, they added Jordi Alba. They added a number of other very expensive players. As they've added these expensive players, guess what's going up?
Ticket prices.
And I'll tell you a real quick anecdote. My daughter and I, my daughter's 39 years old, but she's a huge sports fan. I had to have one of my two kids had to be a huge sports fan. It just had to be that way. It's funny that it became my daughter and not my son, but that's just where the chips fall. But my daughter and I went to football, soccer game. During, and Messi played, and, you know, they're playing in a temporary stadium still. So, you know, right before the game, Melissa and I, my daughter, were walking around, and we wanted to get, like, a hot dog and a soda, and she wanted maybe a beer and all that. Well, so I gave her my credit card. Now, we have free tickets, so I'll cop to that real quickly, because I interviewed one of the customer service reps for Inter Miami on my podcast. So I copped to the free tickets. But she came back and she handed me my credit card back and she handed me a receipt. And I said, what's the receipt for? She says, I'm handing you this receipt because I think when I tell you how much I just paid for two hot dogs, a soda and a beer, you're not going to believe it. It was a ridiculous, it might've been over $50.
Jeez.
And I said, you're right. You know, again, here's a situation where, you know, a league has a chance to, you know, really develop new fans, younger fans, and really kind of empower, you know, their players, and they kind of just went, I hate to say it, they went the same old, same old.
Yeah, and I don't understand. I don't know why people, I don't know why teams like to, you know, bend their fans over the table on food at the concession stand, because they pay pennies on the dollar. I've worked in concessions. I know exactly what the price markup is. I know a case of Labatt Blue is paid for when they sell one Labatt Blue.
That's right.
So I know with popcorn, you're paying like 25, 50 cents for a whole bag if you pop your own. Biggest markups are on popcorn. So why are we crushing people out there? You know, because the whole thing is I think one day someone will have the idea where you're going to sell a ticket and everything's included in your ticket. Like, it's going to include your parking. It's going to include your seat. It's going to include some kind of promo. It's going to include your food. And it's going to be almost like going to a wedding, right? It's like it's all one price for everything. It's going to be stupid large. It's going to be a lot of money. But that's, I think we're heading towards that way. Because like you said, you don't want to go walking around swiping your card everywhere. Yeah. And you just want to pay. Like, I just want to walk in and I've paid for the day. I paid for the event. This is an event now. It's no longer a game. I'm at an event. I'm at a show. And there's all these things I'm going to take part of while I'm here. And I think that's what they want to do.
One league that's been good about that, actually, I have to give them a little bit of props here, is Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. They have tried these package deals, you know, where you get like four tickets, four dogs, four sodas. You know, maybe there's an item of a licensed merch item that you get with it, you know, and it's like $100 for four people. May or may not include parking and all that. So they have tried a lot of these deals.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would call it successful or not. Look, I can tell you Major League Baseball struggled with live attendance for a couple of years. Now, they seem to have broken through a little bit. Frankly, if it wasn't for streaming, I think Major League Baseball might be in trouble. Mm. But they're not. And, you know, I've been watching the playoffs and people were excited and
I don't know how well it works in the bigger cities, but I think it does well in the smaller cities.
It might.
It's a bigger deal for the hardworking dad to be able to take his kids and his wife to a game and, like I said, have the hot dog, have the popcorn, have the ice cream, and for an affordable price, right? Yeah. And I don't really care where I'm sitting. I'm just trying to get into the ballpark here.
even something like WWE. Like, they've just started to,
I can't even try.
Astronomical prices.
I can't believe you went there either, Damon.
What are you going to do? I don't know. Where are we going? WWE? What are we talking about? We're talking about
VIP events. It starts at 10 grand. You get a 3x5 picture, and you get, like, a commemorative pin and some, like, hors d'oeuvres.
Ooh, a commemorative pin.
So we're talking about like the price gouging aspect of it. And as long as people are willing to pay it, people are going to pay it. You know, they're going to keep charging. It's unfortunate.
I'm dying to go to the Sphere to see a concert. I mean, I would love to see, you know, the Eagles, you know, at Sphere or U2 or one of those bands. I would love to, I guess, Coldplay. Although probably not really Coldplay, but, you know, but the tickets are a fortune.
Yeah,
they are. I didn't even know about how much they were charging, but it looks like an experience.
It certainly looks like it. See, I do think this is the one thing about, you know, Damien, how old are you?
I'm 41.
Okay, and Z, how old are you?
Also 41.
Okay, so you guys are basically millennials.
Yeah.
Millennials
we're in that bucket.
Are a unique generation. You know, because, again, I'm a research guy and I've been studying people for a long time. Millennials, different from me, I'm a baby boomer. Baby boomers, and even a little bit of the Gen X, you know, Gen X younger than me, they were about acquiring stuff. I was about acquiring stuff. But the millennials were not about acquiring stuff. They were about acquiring experiences. To them, going to an event in Las Vegas at Sphere would be more valuable than, let's say, acquiring a new set of golf clubs for Neil over here. Because why? I'm a baby boomer. I was about acquiring stuff. Millennials are about acquiring experiences. It's an interesting situation you have when you look at generations.
Yeah, it's one of the things that Kevin Durant talks about all the time.
Does he?
He's about experiences. No, I'm not kidding you. He talks about when he makes his decisions on where he's going to play and where he's going to, you know, what teams he's going to be working out for. It's about experiences. It's not about the town, the city, or the players, or anything like that. It's about experiences. I'm not kidding. He's actually been quoted as saying that.
Not, I, I hear you. I mean, it's you know, look, I think every generation has its kind of line in the sand, or it's kind of you know, fork in the road. I gotta, here I go again with some stupid cliches, but you know, I think, you know, Damian, you're right. You know, that each generation, you know, again, acquiring experiences, you know, it's one of the reasons, you know, one of the things I used to do is I used to work for a company that did research focused on point of sales data, you know, what was selling in stores. And I remember, you know, going and talking at an outdoor event once about how the millennial generation is going to change the outdoor business. Why? They don't want to buy kayaks. They don't want to buy expensive camping gear. They want to go camping, but they don't want to acquire the gear. They just want the experience. They want to go kayaking. They don't want to buy a kayak. They just want to acquire the experience. You know, and in some ways, I think the experience might even be more valuable than the actual kayak or the actual, you know, or you know, the actual stuff. Right. Unfortunately, I have a lot of
tangible
stuff.
Tangible item.
Just look at my garage. My wife's yelling at me every other day. Get some of this stuff, you know, the H out of here. So, I mean, I get, you know, I get where they're coming from on that too. But what can I tell you?
Check out part two of our interview with SBRNet's Neil Schwartz later this week.
Your favorite podcast has its own merch line now. Go to the Fade Store with DNZ.com today and check out our releases in apparel, accessories, drinkware, and more. Ever wanted an Alleged Superstar t-shirt? We got those. You want some yoga pants? We got those too. And we're not done yet. We have a lot of exciting collaborations and new products on the way. But check out what we have now at the Fade Store with DNZ.com. That's the Fade Store with DNZ. Who is the best of the worst this week in sports? The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. You know how it goes. We put up a poll on our X account at FadeRouteDNZ, our Instagram poll at FadeRoutePodcast, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And the winner of said vote gets a shout-out in this year's show and takes home the coveted-ass trophy. And do you know who took home the coveted-ass trophy last week, D?
I don't.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Step right up and beat the Mets. Well, like many did in the second half of the season. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Legend Superstar of the Week, D?
All right, so first up, I've got former Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez, who allegedly, or actually, no, he did.
No, he did
it. Stabbed and assaulted a truck driver in downtown Indianapolis over the weekend. Seemed to be a drunk episode where he attacked a man over a parking spot. Not a good look for the former Jets quarterback. Mark Sanchez, you are my Alleged Superstar of the Week. Number two, I'm going with Max Fried.
Oof.
My man could not get out of his own way in game two. He could not get the ball to the catcher. He got lit up. I believe he gave up 6 runs. And then he was relieved by Warren, who then gave up 7 runs. But Max Fried, going back to his old Atlanta waves. Oh, so Max Fried, you are my Alleged Superstar of the Week. And number three will be the running back of the Arizona Cardinals, DeMarcado. Ah, going for the go-ahead touchdown, 72 yards, 76 yards, about to cross the goal line, and yeah, drops the ball.
Yeah.
And just throws it on the ground. And they eventually lose the game. So, DeMarcado, you are my Alleged Superstar of the Week. What do you got, Z?
Yeah, that was a gut buster. An absolute gut buster. I'm going to start with the Giants. 14-3 against the winless Saints. Things are looking up. Things are looking good. You're moving the ball. All looks well. And defense is playing strong. And then 5 consecutive turnovers. five consecutive drives. You let Spencer Rattler look like freaking Drew Brees out there. A really bad Shahid with that 80-yard touchdown thing because Newbin bit and bit hard on a move. An absolute shit show from the Giants. And it erodes a lot of hope that you had. And it's a simple reminder that, yeah, there's going to be growing pains this year. Scataboo fumbled. You know, Jackson Dart threw two picks, although one was on fourth down and actually improved their field position, so you can't really get too bent out of shape about it. Better than throwing it away and giving them the field positioning at the 35. So you'll take that, I suppose. Slayton with a fumble. Dart with a fumble. Like, not even... Darts wasn't even punched out. He was making a move, and the way he was holding the ball was so loose and so dangerous, it hit off of his leg and squirted out of his hand. And the Giants play the Eagles on Thursday. Yikes. Could this be the week that Daboll gets sacked?
I think it's kind of funny with Daboll because he's like, oh, I love working with Jackson Dart. It's a great dream. He's just trying to save his job.
Not saving your worthless ass.
Just saving. Full of shit, dude.
Dude, and did you see the Saquon thing? There's a Saquon documentary. They offered him the Slayton contract. It was literally like what they gave John Runyon, what they gave Darius Slayton, and he would have taken it. He pulled the old Aaron Rodgers line. I play for $10 million. The old Aaron Rodgers line. Ay, ay, ay. Fucking mess.
And he asked for a trade in 2023.
Yeah, it's like denied. No stairway. Denied. New York Giants, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, UNC football. Ugh, another dog shit performance. And Hulu pulled the plug on the in-season Hard Knock style documentary that you were doing in Chapel Hill. Yeah, this experiment. Really? Yeah, it's not going to be on Hulu anymore. Huh. So, yeah, Chapel Bill is really like, it's failing. It is a failure on every single possible level. On the field, off the field, you name it. Bet they're wishing they exercised that buyout before the season started. UNC football, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And number three, LeBron. Oh, LeBron. Yesterday, announces a second decision. Got everybody all worked up. What could the second decision be? Like, is he saying he wants to get traded from the Lakers? Is he going to retire? Is this his last year? No! It's a Hennessy ad! He's promoting his new partnership with Hennessy for his 23rd season and Hennessy 23. You corny ass SOB. Like, are you kidding me with that? And you know what? Fans bought it hook, line, and sinker. And social media was ablaze. Like, what made you think? Because he did it before. What do you think he's playing off of? He's done this thing before. And he played everybody on it. So corny. So ridiculous. But right on brand for LeBron James. LeBron James, you are my alleged superstar of the week. I think we said our piece. Go to our X account at FadeRouteDNZ. Go to our Instagram poll at FadeRoutePodcast and vote. And vote and vote and vote. And for our nominees.
You're better than that. Just do better. Just do better.
This has been The Fade Route with DNZ. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So until next time, stay fade, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.